Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Dare to Dream. This is Debbie Dashinger. Beautiful people. Today, we're talking to Tim Tactics, who worked for the German government. Tim has had numerous experiences with advanced technologies and shares his insider knowledge from 10 years of work in undisclosed projects on the topic of the current disclosure. His deep understanding of the mysteries of the universe come from his extensive contacts. Dare to Dream podcast won 3 Talk Radio Positive Change Awards, won the COVR Award for Best Radio Podcast Show, Welp Magazine named Dare to Dream one of the best 20 podcasts to listen to this year, and its high ranking under self-improvement in Apple Podcasts. The show is sponsored by Dr. Dane here in Access Consciousness. If you would like to do any energy work with them, go to accessconsciousness.com. I'm Debbie Dashinger. I'm a media visibility expert, and I'm a book writing coach. I help you take your book from the inception and the idea to published. And also, I've got a team that takes your book to a guaranteed international best-selling status. And finally, I show you how to be interviewed on radio and podcast and get massive results. If you would like to learn how to be more visible now, in your world, in your business, I've got a gift for you that shows you how. Go to debbiedashinger.com/gift. It's debbiedashinger.com/gift. Well, my guest today, Tim Tactics, is a governance expert from Europe. For almost a decade, he worked as a tactical advisor within the covert governance sector in Europe, which aims, among other things, to understand the missions and strategies of non-human intelligences on our planet and beyond. He was in experiments with exotic life forms, beings not from this earth. And Tim also reports on his numerous experiences with advanced technologies, plus the mysteries of the universe. You can find him on his website at allshifthappilynow.com. And additionally, Tim and I are both presenting in September at the Portal to Ascension Glastonbury UK conference. There's going to be a link in the show notes so you can buy tickets to attend this amazing upcoming conference. And with that, I welcome Tim Tactics to Dare to Dream. It's so great to have you here.
Debbie, thank you so much for having me, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Although there's a lot in your bio that I could really skip around in, I do want to start for me and for the audience with the inception and where you began. So if you don't mind briefly to talk a little bit about your background, your story, how did you even get involved? How did you get asked by the government to be involved with this investigating UFOs and advanced technologies?
Well, in the first place, I didn't. So the recruitment process is now slowly changing, and we've seen that, with the establishment of certain other branches like the Space Force and so on. This clearly comes from the fact that the recruitment process of these non-disclosed advanced projects is pretty heavy. It's a long ongoing process that took several years. And there, other than, in comparison to usual recruitment, there's never like a job interview where people are saying like, hey, we'd like you to read that and sign up for that. It is more that I got recruited very, very early on. I was in, university at that time, law school, and I got asked to become part of like conventional governance projects, which mostly looking into the situation, how to steer the public diplomacy around countries, Which means basically if people have like certain projects, how to implement them so that they can be lawfully integrated, but also accepted by the majority of the population as well. And then, you know, things, it took basically 4 years, and I was like down the rabbit hole faster than I was like, than I was able to realize that it's happening. So it basically starts with like little sprinkles of information that land on your desk. For example, I was at that time working on a certain project that had nothing to do with UFOs or ETs. And then you get new documents to analyze. And one of these documents, and it was a historical project. So one of these documents then was like coming from the Vatican and talking about, you know, people in medieval times speaking about the presence of reptile beings. Yeah, something like that. So, and you don't think much about it, I guess. At least I didn't at that time, you know, because you treat these sources, these historical sources as, as part of that zeitgeist, as you know, you don't necessarily take that and say like, wow, that is major news. No, this is like someone like 500 years ago talking about mystical creatures, but also talking about Jesus, angels, and other you know, beings that you know, that could be placed into like spirituality or religion or something. So that is how it went. And then it went.
Let me ask you a quick question about that piece. When this came across your desk, Tim, was it written in such a way that at that time in medieval times, that this was actually accepted? This was like, yes, of course, there were reptilians and there were angels and there was Yeshua. Or was it written as though some government at that time knew of these beings and it was still not disclosed?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's much more profane than that, actually. It even came in Latin, so I completely had to translate it, which my colleague at that time, which was much better in translating Latin than I was. So it took me like multiple days to even analyze these Latin texts because they like, you know, also written in a different kind of Latin. It's a clerical Latin and so on. So, and he was like fluid in that, which always astonished me in some ways when he was like, when I took like the whole weekend for that and he was like just reading it fluently. So it was one of these documents that came in Latin, and it wasn't, you know, there was no reaction put to it. It's just like it was some author writing about reptile beings. But again, you get like these documents like multiple times in a month where you just have like some author talking about meeting, you know, seeing, you know, Jesus Christ or the, I don't know, like an angel or some kind of spiritual appearance or something. You have a lot of these documents. So it's nothing where there was either like a certain reaction put to it, nor would it, you know, make me react in a certain way. And that was like the moment where I believe that these documents found my desk in order to check how is he going to react to these things. Uh-huh. And then more stuff happened. So the next stage would be that I was invited within this environment that I was working on. I was invited to an experiment because it was like a highly, you know, educated surrounding, and they had different other stuff going on, and they were shooting. I don't quite know actually the setup of that experiment, but what they did was like they were opening up light, and that is pretty spectacular. So they asked me to join, and the fact is that light as we perceive it is just like the outside edge of a wave, right? Light can be like a wave and it can be a beam or like a particle. And we only perceive a certain outside edge of that. But the reality is, just as much as we see the surface of an ocean, you can dive into that ocean and you will find reality, like realms, life environments. And what they did was, like, they opened up this light wave, and there were beings inside of there. At least there were, like, appearances in there. So it wasn't like clearly communicated to me like, hey, Tim, oh my goodness, we made contact with beings that live in light. No, they are like, hey, we are opening up light, the wave of light. And do you want to see what we would then almost like as like a Fata Morgana or something, like an optical illusion is appearing. So you could see these beings. And it turned out that these beings are actually real beings, but I realized that many, many, many years later. And the last time that I had like this clicking moment was when I met Linda Moulton Howe, who's you know her, right?
Yes.
Right? It's she's like an award-winning journalist, and she and I did like told my story on Gaia, on Truth Hunter, and she was extremely critical at first, but then I told her some information and then she opened up so much and she showed me her book and she was interviewing someone telling like with a near-death experience and they saw these beings. And I said like, and that girl made like a drawing and I said like, my goodness, I made a drawing of what I saw back in these experiments as well. And we took them, put them close to each other and they were exactly the same. And then I went to Jeff Mara, who you know too, because you're on that as well. And he was saying, Tim, last night I had someone, a doctor from a kids hospital, and these kids they talk to something invisible, some beings that, you know, seem to guide them into their last, you know, stand between, you know, in their last transitional phase. Because apparently that is what these beings do. They create afterworlds. And they were, and Jeff, and I was describing these beings to Jeff, and he was like, wow, that is exactly what the doctor was saying too. These are these beings. But I realized that many, many, many years later, at that time, it was just like an extremely interesting experiment where you could actually see like beings wobbling in like a field of light, and was like incredibly interesting.
And did they make contact with you, or was it strictly visual?
Well, at that time, it was just like it didn't come to me as like contact. It was like more like if you watch like an incredibly detailed holographic projection or something. There was never the point where it was like, oh my goodness, this is major news. I can't, or something, you know. It was just like I was watching that and I thought like, oh, that is pretty interesting. And then I went on. The interesting thing, why they called me in, because again, at that time I was like working on something in the medieval times. And as you know, the Templars played a huge role in that huge time, in that time period and so on. And these beings showed themselves with classic Templar robes. They even had the Red Cross on their Templar robe. And that was like the linking point to my project. And then they were also like, hey, Tim, it's super cool. Want to see it in like downtime or something. So that was like, that is how you get recruited over time. And then they see how you react. And then you get, you know, you go deeper, the rabbit hole.
And may I ask, prior to this and prior to even your job, you're still in law school, were you a believer? Did you have UFO experiences, or were you a complete non-believer and this was all new to you?
Well, when I left these projects, I never would have expected that people do not know. That was something that was like, pretty drawing to me, and to the closing the gap between these you know, projects and the reality that I had when I was like when I was interacting with like the norm stream world or something. So it was like, for me, it was like a given fact and a reality, nothing that I would ever think about in a way that we're not alone or something. It's just like, as much as I see that there are like cats and dogs and different other species, or like, let's say like microbacteria or something. It's nothing that we see, but it wouldn't shock you or anyone if someone was saying like, hey, on that table, there's like a billion microbacteria living there. That's like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, that was like the attitude that I had. And yes, in like the beginning, like in my early childhood at home, there were like interesting and weird events, you know, that happened. And that clearly makes sense because I feel like people are being contacted, and then it's not a coincidence that you land in these projects then.
So interesting. And I have to ask this follow-up question about the robes. Could you describe these robes? Because I am familiar with the Templars, but I have no idea what they wore.
Yeah. Well, the Templar had this Maltesian cross, which almost looks like the cross that Jesus, you know, was nailed onto. But it's like a red cross. Yeah, that was actually, they were wearing that on their robes. The knights, the Templar knights, were wearing that on their robes. And these beings, they had gray skin. They had a roundish but a little bigger skull than usually. They were not the grays, which is kind of interesting because they're, you know, apparently we call these ETs sometimes by, you know, the most significant optical, you know, thing that happens that we see, like, oh, they have gray skin, so they are the grays or something. But that is not the way that you classify life forms. You know, that would be like saying like, hey, these people with a nose, I've visited their country. And then you think like, what country did you visit? Like, there's a lot of different countries with people with noses. So there, it happens that there are a lot of beings that have gray skin or different other skin tones as well. But Linda Moulton Howe was like saying, these are the grays. And said like, this is a different species, but they're also gray. And apparently what I realized many, many years later is that they built worlds in the afterlife. Because as we know, the whole world is an illusion. Reality is an illusion, but it's a very tangible illusion. And the universe is one, well, the name says it, it's one big life form. And something that the universe doesn't want to experience is trauma and stress and all that kind of stuff. So death for some beings might be a reasonable mechanic in order to go from one place to another incarnation or something, but it shouldn't be like the completely chaotic, traumatizing effect or event or something. So they kick in and they create these afterlife worlds where beings have these, you know, these experiences, like a park, for example, where, you know, you meet with other souls that are also there. You see your family, you see some nice beings that say like, hey, welcome here in this park, you did well, and now it's time to move on. And then they get a hug, and then everything turns into light, and then you go from there into another incarnation and you're reborn. So that is something that they do instead of going into a realm where you realize, oh my goodness, there is nothing but real nothingness, and everything is just a mental, you know, mental illusion.
I was so curious about these beings, because when you said that, it's a little bit arresting for me. I started a couple of months ago, I'll just call it in the most pedestrian terms, I stopped dreaming, and I definitely started leaving my body and experiencing other lifetimes and just having other experiences. One of them was extraterrestrial, and it was quite beautiful. because I opened my eyes and I was surrounded by light beings. They were tall, but not as tall as I've seen, more a little bit, yeah, maybe 6 feet tall and full of light, but they were wearing these white robes and almost the top was conish and came down and just these white robes and just this luminosity was coming from them. And I just, that, you know, they were surrounding me. It was like a ceremony and I felt super loved and cared about and seen. And I didn't know if they were my family or who they were, but I felt really honored. And then I woke up, Tim, and I was like, can we please do that again tonight? Please, can we do that tonight? So I didn't know if that was what you were describing as these beings.
How recent was that?
Very recent. Yeah, about a month ago.
Well, maybe there's no coincidence in the universe. So maybe because we're talking about that, maybe that's like first contact in that kind of way. Now we're talking about these beings. I can actually show you a drawing if you want to. It's unfortunate to all the radio listeners out there, but you can still go on Debbie's YouTube and watch the visuals there. So it's a drawing that I made for the I made it for Linda Moulton Howe and the Truth Hunter episode. Let me see. I can't share my screen because you deactivated that.
No, you can. I actually gave you hosting privilege. Yes.
Oh, now I can. Okay, good. Okay, so there we go. You should actually see these.
Wow. Hopefully. You drew that?
Yes, I did. I did. And as you can see, there's like the robes and that is like the whole thing, like how I saw it, you know. There was like this almost like like the surface of water, but it was like invisible light. It was like a light surface that opened up, and as if they were like swimming in there, and these were the beings. Didn't say anything, nothing happened, but that was my experience.
Beautiful. And oh my god, they're elongated hands, amazing fingers. Was that actually the purpose of this experiment that you got invited to? Was it the purpose that they felt when they put on this light in particular that you would have access, anyone who was there would have access to see and experience these beings? Or is that a fascinating anomaly that just took place?
No, well, so first of all, I can't really say what the purpose of that experience was, because I can only from like retrospective, I can only tell that these were probably the milestones that brought me into the ET undisclosed worlds and so on. So deeper into the rabbit hole, as I like to call it. So there was never a moment where someone was like, hey, Tim, we showed you this because that and that. They were like always very intransparent. But the beings were already there. So when they were like telling me, hey, Tim, there is something going on in that department, you know, where they use these lasers and these big machines and so on. Do you want to come over? Like, I don't know, this guy and that guy is also there. We found something really interesting because we have like a holographic image where we opened like the wave of light, and they're like beings, and they have like a tempera cross. I don't even think that they said like they were beings. I assume they were saying like, hey, we have this visuals, and they show Templar crosses. Do you want to look into that? Because you are also, you know, involved with that history of the Templars at that time. It's just like, you know, friendly colleagues inviting you over, showing you something
for a cosmic experience. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And in that environment, and being 18 or something at that time, and I was like not thinking about it much, to be very honest.
Incredible stuff. Well, let's go back in time. Let's get a historical overview, if we can, of UFO sightings and encounters, especially World War II and beyond, just to give our audience some context.
Yeah. Well, we've been visited quite a lot in the last few thousand of years. It depends how far back we go. So usually in history, you have like different eras of like modern history, and then like ancient history, and so on and so on. And all these different eras come with different ET experiences. So if you want to go back only like in what we call like the modern history, then clearly World War II was like a major turning point, for Europe and Germany as well. It was like something that happened in the 1930s already. Many people might not know that. David Grush actually was sent from the US into Paris, talking to Le Parisien, and he gave an interview, and he was basically exposing Mussolini, who was a leader dictator at that time in Italy, who had found a crashed UFO. The Germans as well, they didn't go too much into that history for certain reasons, but the World War II was like a heavy turning point for like modern society, modern governance, modern governments to find out about the presence of UFOs. But if you go back even further, and clearly you know that, and a lot of probably your listeners know that as well, there have been instances and contacts and visitations for thousands and thousands of years. And even 15,000 years ago, we had like different civilizations living on this planet before the big cataclysm happened, which is a cyclical thing. It's something that I found information on as well in these projects, that the time of the cyclical development on this earth is happening right now again. And the reason why we have these talks, why I can like share some stuff, and why we are going to have more information in the next few years, is because we're in the middle of a cyclical cosmic event on planet Earth.
Okay. Is this a sort of thing? I know Matt LaCroix talks about it, and Graham Hancock, about the history of this planet and the cataclysms that happened that basically wiped out humanity, and Noah's Ark and so forth, but many others, and how we would ostensibly come back again. And is that the level of which you're talking about, is potential utter destruction?
Well, I would say wiping out humanity is like a very harsh formulation, to be honest. So everything in the universe, at least in this version of the universe that we are living in right now, and don't want to spoil it for others, but there are different other versions of the universe that can be quite different and even more exotic than the one that we are experiencing here. But the one that we are experiencing here is a solar-based dualistic universe. It means, you and I can experience ourselves as you and I. And the sun is actually bringing a lot of the data, the information, the consciousness into our world. So light can carry information. So that is why the light and the sun is so relevant. Everything in this version of the universe is happening cyclically, which apparently we can see day and night, summer, winter, but also, the equinoxes as well, which is a moment where this planet has like different energy flows onto it. The energies get compressed at certain times in the year. But then we not only have the Earth, but we have the sun itself. And the sun of this solar system is also moving. It's not a fixed star. It's moving. It's rapidly rushing through. It has its own orbit around a much, much, much more denser and, richer in mass object or entity, let's put it that way. So the sun is flying through the universe at a rapid speed, and it draws all these planets with her. And we are circling around the sun. So the sun is actually also in cyclical orbit, which takes much longer. But at certain times, this sun and the whole solar system is entering a universal spot where there are more information, more data available. It's denser, it's more packed. And these times happen on this planet around every 15,000 years. I think Graham Hancock and others, they have found, you know, good proof that this happened. We find magnetic changes in the soil. We've seen that 15,000 years ago. We find that the solar activities are changing again, and they have been changing, and so on and so on and so on. And we find in a lot of the biblical texts and the ancient texts, we find talks about the flood and so on and so on. So all this stuff happened. And 15,000 years ago, again, we had a different civilization living on this planet. Now we have a different one again. And 15,000 years ago, there were like three different pathways where these beings actually went. Apparently they all vanished, but that doesn't mean that they are like wiped out. It just means that they reacted to that phase that we are entering again, and some made it up, some made it down, and some are still living on this surface planet.
If I understand you correctly, Tim, when you say some made it up, some left this planet galaxy to go live in another. And when you say some made it down, they went inside Earth to live.
Exactly. So imagine 15,000 years ago, you have like a hugely well-developed civilization that has built all these temples, all these beautiful and extravagant structures that can't even be built today with today's measures and means. But then something cosmical happened. Something cosmic happens where like the Earth core stops rotating, the magnetic poles change, the water masses get like get in turbulence, and basically like swap over some of the land masses. And it was like an emergency moment, that's for sure. But we have found evidence that some of these people at that time were rescued, for example, by beings that do live inside of the Earth. So for everyone who might, just for everyone to bring everyone on the same page, the Earth itself is not a solid structure. It has gigantic caves that, you know, build huge areas under the surface. And we know, and this is like already disclosed in the last couple of months too, if you Google that, you're going to find new information about that secretly sprinkled into the public discourse, that they are like huge caverns, huge caves, you know, underground, that can carry more water than the whole water of every ocean on the surface of this planet. And these are just singular caves. So you can imagine how big and you know, vast these areas are. And there are beings living there, as always. Wherever there's like a life environment, there are beings that utilize this life environment. You have that in the seas, in the oceans, the mountains, the skies, on the surface, of course, as well. And these beings came to the surface and took some of the you know, remaining beings of that civilization, took them underground, and they are living there for thousands and thousands of years. And they have created an alternative, or like structures, civilized structures, very comparable to the surface humans. And well, governments found out about it in the 1960s when they were digging into very, very deeply into the soil, and suddenly a big crack appeared. and land masses fall into this huge hole that appeared in, like, I think, like, Nevada desert or somewhere in the North Americas. And they basically were looking down onto a city as huge as New York City or something, with huge buildings and everything. So that was the moment when, by accident, we made contact with other humans inside of the Earth.
How do they live without the sun? So they have water, no sun, no moon. If they're inside the Earth, what do they draw from?
Well, the advantages that these beings have, that they, when they are living inside of these caverns or these tunnels or these caves, is that they're mostly unaffected by everything that occurs on the surface level. So no storms, no rapid water, erosions, nothing like that is going to happen if you, like, inside of the Earth crust 60 miles deep or something. The thing about that is that they had to establish themselves over time as well. So while there was, like, at first it was only like an emergency, hideaway place, but over time it seems that these beings have settled there, and over time have also come to develop technologies, just as much as we have technologies, and as much as we have artificial lights. This is absolutely feasible and doable, and they utilize these lights as well.
Mm. And so when this happened 15,000 years ago, is this the major harvest that you talk about? Is it the same occasion experience?
It's interesting that you call that the harvest, because the Grays, which we also had contact with, they called it the harvest as well. This is the other option that happened. Oh, by the way, talking about your last question as well, we also have to assume that these people at that time, 15,000 years ago, they were well established, and they were utilizing, the natural energies and phenomena of this universe very sophisticatedly. So these aren't cave people or something, but these are people that have created structures in the Egypts, in these huge temples and so on and so on. So they were aware of how, like, electricity worked back then already. And you can find certain symbols in like the hieroglyphs and so on, and certain proof to that they knew that, there are certain charged particles and so on and so on. So this all was known to them. And when you're talking about the harvest, it's very interesting to me, because you're utilizing that word, and the Grays were describing it that way as well. And there were also different ET species that were kicking in and taking some of the material, that is how they call that. They took some of the material away from the Earth and integrated them into their own kind and into their own species as well. So ultimately, these cataclysms didn't wipe out the whole civilization, but they made these civilizations change in a major way. And some of them have founded gigantic civilizations inside of this Earth, outside of this Earth, and they're still here, and they're still involved, and they know what's happening on this planet because they've been here.
That is so amazing. It reminds me of, I got really obsessed decades ago when I heard about the Telos, who live underneath Sedona. And that's, well known in the Sedona region, and that they were initially from Atlantis or Lemuria. And when that cataclysm occurred, well, some of those people escaped and went to Egypt. Some the ones who went by sea on a boat were very successful. But there was also a modicum of people who went under Earth, and they do call them the Telos. And I remember, again, my sister-in-law, because she's been into this stuff way before me, would send me these books. And it's funny, because I wasn't actually a believer at the time, but there was something else in me that would, like, oh, I have to go to Sedona. I have to have this experience. And I felt that way until I finally went. And, there was a slow awakening in me for a while. But it sounds a lot like that. And I guess every so often, it's rare, but every so often, one of those beings will come to the surface. And I bet a little bit like Sasquatch, right? And they'll be seen and there's a big hubbub about it and then nothing again. But it, for a lot of people, it just proves, yes, they do exist inside of the earth. Yeah.
That is very true. I mean, we have cave paintings where, you know, you see these old humans, these ancient humans, and with, you know, very weird, not weird, but very exotic life forms standing next to them. The truth is that this planet itself is mostly an ant planet. You should know that there is, like, I think 127 million ants come on one human. That's how many ants are living on this planet. And the reality shows that some of these ants are pretty far developed as well. So in consciousness and so on and so on. So we don't only have these you know, pretty small ants that live on the surface level, but we also have like seven feet tall ant beings that live here. And there are certain tribes all over the world, in South America, in Northern America, in the Asias and Africa as well, that talk about these ancient, you know, ant beings that sometimes occur to be on the surface, even though they actually live inside of the planet, inside of the crust, quite deep. But sometimes they come up and sometimes they are seen. And I'm on Instagram, Tip Tactics, by the way, and there's like one girl that that was really shocked, because she's from Indonesia, and she found me on Gaia, and she was like, she had nothing to do with ETs, but she ran into one of these gigantic ant beings. And at that, yes, and at that moment, she had no idea about what happened to her. She was in Indonesia. She was going into the forest. She had no spiritual, you know, stories or experiences before. And she suddenly heard a voice inside of her head repeating, "The ground people are here. The ground people are here. The ground people are here." And she didn't know what to do with that. It apparently seemed to be like a warning or something, like, if you go further, you're probably gonna run into us. We're not dangerous, but we want you to know, so you are prepared that we're here, that we share the space with you. And she basically ran. Well, she went on, and she basically ran into a 7 feet tall ant being that was on the surface, standing there tall, up front, in front of her. And that was the night when she ran away, but she looked into Gaia that night. She subscribed to Gaia. She looked into Cosmic Disclosure, into, you know, Truth Hunter with me and so on. And then she wrote, texted me on Instagram and said, like, she couldn't make sense of what happened to her. And I explained to her, well, you ran into an ant being, and there's like a huge population of these beings. Usually you won't see them, but apparently you are one of these rare individuals that have. It's nothing to be worried about.
Incredible. Wow, what an experience. And when you describe them, I mean, we know ants as being phenomenal workers, right? They're the ones, and they can carry, I forgot how many times their weight,
yes.
And they work together. Ants yeah. are known to be a tribe that they have one vision, and they're going to build something like a New York City under yeah. the earth. I mean, they could actually do that, and at least 7 feet tall. That's yes. beyond possible.
She also had incredible photos of all of that, which she showed me on Instagram. She was too scared to publish them, but it was like, it was incredibly detailed, took with an iPhone or something. So it was like a very, very rare occasion. And I was lucky and happy to have these, to have this, this conversation, this upcoming. But you're right. Ants are very, 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 they work relentlessly. Especially all these tribes, these ancient tribes that talk about these gigantic ants, they always say that. And for me, I've read some stuff about these ground people. I personally am extremely interested in them, even though I have never met them yet. Hopefully that will change at one point. But I'm so freaking interested in them because the stuff that I read, it's not completely clicking in the way that it makes sense to a human mind. Mm-hmm. Ants are so complex. Like, for example, something that just made more sense to me in like the last few weeks, because I'm constantly, you know, thinking about these documents that I've read, is that these ant beings, for example, they have a certain portion of their population that are so-called, in English, you would say runners or explorer ants. And mm-hmm. these beings just go out into the world, and they are meant to actually die if needed. So they have no fear of dying. They are extremely courageous and just go into other places and just in order to explore new places. And humans, I mean, you know, sometimes the human species has that too. When I'm thinking about, like, you know, people that freely get into a rocket and let themselves shoot, you know, into the sky or something, or like the first person that, you know, tasted a potato and was lucky enough not to eat the poisonous leaves, but was able to then tell the tribe, hey, potatoes are nice, which Germans apparently benefited very much from, because they are the number one eaters of potatoes in the world. But other than that, it's like usually humans have a different routine, a different evolution, and they behave differently. And to me, that is like extremely interesting. And these ant beings have developed because they're also extremely, extremely sensitive, psychically sensitive, sensitive to different wavelengths and so on. So ants and insects in general are extremely sensitive towards electricity. The way they communicate is through mostly like telepathy and certain other sense and so on. So it's incredibly interesting how they are, you know, developed. And the documents state that the ants are actually going into realities, and they have learned techniques in order to you know, dig holes from one reality into another reality, which is so exotic to me compared to what, you know, humans can do. Especially because humans always rely on technology in a major way. You know, if someone wants to open like a portal, they will build some sort of accelerator or something, some type of technology. And these ants, and typically insects, they become the tool in their own evolution. And that is something that I'm like extremely fascinated by.
And when you say they dig their way to another reality, do you mean like literally digging? Physically.
Yeah, like literally. So it's, and again, I'm still processing what I've read in these documents, and right now I haven't met them yet. Again, I'm open for that because I'm so interested in that. But just as much as ants that, you know, dig themselves into the soil, like regular surface ants, like the smaller ones, these ant beings, very, very sophisticated, very, very evolved in many ways. They have consciousness that is like more intelligent than, if that is even possible to judge that in that way, but very, very evolved consciousness. They seem to, at least that is what the documents are stating, they seem to have found mechanical ways to utilize themselves in order to open portals from one reality to another reality. They are not even utilizing portals, but they are like digging themselves into the reality realm, and that is something that I'm very often thinking about, and it's so exciting and far off from what comes to human mind that I'm like, it's just so interesting to me.
Me too. Are there any other exotic life forms that you know of or have experienced that are, you know, really significant?
Well, I think we should really emphasize that there are like other intelligent beings that live on this planet at the very moment. And I'm not even talking about visitors, because yes, we do know that there are constant visitors and visitations from other planets, and they're mostly in disguise, or they hide away or try to not influence or intermingle with the human surface species. But we do know that, for first of all, this planet was an ant planet, again, 127 million compared to one human, comes on one human. So these beings live here 60 miles underneath the surface. We do also know that there's a specific type of reptile species that has survived the aftermath of like the dinosaur age. And again, that is millions of years in. And you better believe that in millions of years, beings evolve consciously very much. So these seem to be a reptile species that comes from the dinosaur age. And when the huge cataclysm happened and mostly all the dinosaurs, you know, extincted, then these special type actually made it into the caverns as well and survived the cataclysm and had few millions of years to establish a sophisticated culture themselves.
That's so interesting. It makes me wonder, as you talk about this, Tim, so what was that like? So most of these dinosaurs are going extinct, but there's a few outliers. This is just my imagination. There's a few outliers, and somehow, and they're trying to escape the impending doom. Do they find a cave opening? Does something from living all these miles beneath the surface come out and recognize and rescue, or want to, like Noah's Ark, bring in this breed? Like, what happened that
Yes.
allowed them to take that huge change into this completely different lifestyle and start to create from there?
I believe you just said it completely correctly, you know, just something that happened, and certain species, you know, were on the vanishing point. And, you know, as much as Darwin's theory needs some reworking,
retooling.
But right. But where he's right is that whenever there's a species that fits into their life environment very well, it has high chances of like surviving and evolving. And so by any chance, some of these beings, and it seems to be like a certain species that is like related to raptors and these dinosaurs, which are already said to be extremely intelligent at that time, right? And these beings very, very, also not super large, but just as big enough to go into certain, you know, holes and certain caves. And if that happens and a species lands in a better life environment that is more stable, and they manage to fit in there, they have quite a good chance to develop.
They must have had raptor rehab, because, you know, they were some of the most dangerous dinosaurs living at that time. They were murderous, right? What they were capable of. So to consider that they're now living under the earth with many other species, ants and other reptiles, etc., and it must be peaceful, right? They're breeding and living and having full cities and lives. So they must have had some kind of way of switching around their behavior, that they were more inclusive and collaborative with other beings.
Yeah, I mean, so interestingly enough, I've never been to the inner earth. I've only encountered people, colleagues that, you know, have looked into these cases and analyzed that. But it seems that they have like very sophisticated structures there. Of course, it's different, very exotic and different to what humans have set up. But apparently, if you take multiple millions of years of evolution, and you're already such an advanced creature or being, Because if you think about the raptors at that time, they developed very smart techniques in order to hunt, in order to socialize, and so on. We all know that already from their, their origin, their predecessors, and so on. If you take that into consideration, and now you add like multiple millions of years, this human species is not that old, and they have managed to set up like a rather intact civilization and societal structure. Then you have that too. But it seems like these reptile species down there, they are still like they're still into meat. We've always been warned that there are some of them that would not, they would not, have like a bad time eating a human. It's not something that regularly happens, but just as, and people are like, some people that I told them, they were like shocked, like, oh my God, how can they eat a human? But I try to explain them, for them, they do not like hunt for humans and eat them or something. It's just like, as much as usually you and I and other beings, we would probably not take a cow and kill it ourselves and eat it, but there are some humans on the surface planet that rather enjoy eating a steak sometime, and that is like the situation that they have down there. So they're mostly sophisticated enough to not do it, but there might be a hunter or so that might be interested. If by any chance a human would ever choose to go miles and miles and miles of into like caverns and tunnels into the earth, which probably is not going to happen anyway.
Well said. I want to go back to what you brought up earlier about the sun, Tim, because I have seen the news. So I mean, I think most people are aware of the solar flares, but I've seen the more recent news and the magnetic poles and some of the shifts. And what don't we know? What don't the majority of people know about the sun that is really important and impactful to us?
Oh, that's a brilliant question, and very, 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 very important, Debbie. Thank you for asking that. So first of all, I want to take everyone back into these times when people were still thinking about the sun as a god, right? You find that everywhere in all cultures all around the globe. The truth is that the sun gives a lot of the data and a lot of the input that we utilize in order to build our own consciousness. So we get the consciousness that we perceive as our own personality, as our own character traits, and our own awareness. We get that directly from the sun, just as much as every single life on this planet utilizes the sun in order to grow and thrive and evolve, right? Plants do that, but everything is actually emitting and interchanging photons and sun information at all times. It's always happening. So the sun plays an enormous role for life, but also for consciousness as well. And that is the reason why all these different civilizations 15,000 years ago and throughout time were always considering the sun as the sun god, the god of the sun, and so on. And still, we do see that whenever you want to indicate that something has consciousness, you make it like a golden halo around their face, right? Jesus has that, and certain, Vishnu and Buddha and so on, they're always depicted with one big halo, with one sun behind their head, indicating that they became aware through the consciousness of the sun that they are actually not the person of the ego, but they are more like the universal cosmical phenomenon that directly comes down from the sun activity. So the sun itself at that very moment is actually entering a phase and a region in the universe that has tensor energies. Mm-hmm. That means more information is hitting the planet. And we know that the Norm Stream Media is currently talking about that. They bring that into relation with, you know, computer technology, saying there could be a big blackout and so on and so on. I would personally say there's like a different reason for that. But the reality is that the more sun activities we have, the more information flows into our consciousness. And that will absolutely, absolutely influence consciousness on this planet. Not only our own consciousness, but dogs, cats, elephants, reptiles, every single being on this planet and other planets as well will go through this phase where more information will hit their consciousness. And you can already see on Instagram, there are like, you know, all these videos of dogs pushing buttons and talking to them. You see them, Debbie? Yeah.
I'm obsessed with them. Honestly, I follow a dog who sits at a computer. But my favorite is Luna. Luna is a doodle. And her owner says, Luna, what is 9 minus 3? And Luna sits there. And you can tell Luna's thinking. And then she taps out.
Taps her shoulder. Yes.
It's wild.
It's amazing. It is freaking amazing. And that is happening currently in front of our eyes, right? And it's so important to open the eyes of people to just realize that. We always talk about these convincers in the programs, in the projects, excuse me, where we say it's so important that people see what's happening. It's so important. We see cats. I've seen videos where cats are like, where someone is like greeting a cat, and that cat is actually replying and giving their best attempt to give back the greeting. Right? We have some videos where it's like, "Hey, buongiorno," and the cat is like, "Buongiorno." You know, it's hilarious. It's beautiful. You've seen apes utilizing iPads, iPhones, guys. How real can it get, right? This is all happening in front of eyes. I've seen videos now they found out that dogs can actually ride cars. So yes, it's real. They've done a study on dogs and there's like dogs that drive cars. Of course, they have like little blocks on the pedals so they can reach them and so on and so on. But it's hilarious. All that is happening. Then there are like birds that already imitate the human language tone to tone perfectly. You know, they speak and they answer and they make jokes and all that kind of stuff. It's all recorded and seen on Instagram, YouTube, and so on. And then, of course, something that we also have to take into consideration, AI. I mean, humanity has been looking for intelligent life for so many decades. And now actually we can see that there's a life form that is rapidly evolving and developing so much faster, so much more rapidly than any human could ever do. And it's happening right in front of our eyes, right in front of our eyes.
This is so fascinating what you are sharing right now, Tim, because last week I had a Swami on the show. He's an Italian Swami, but from the lineage of the Indian masters. His name is Shivananda Swamiji. And so he only speaks Italian, by the way. We had a translator. Wow. And I have witnessed his healing, doing darshans, blessing healings for groups and individuals. And I was always fascinated because I would see the person laying in front of him and I would see the Swami looking off, but he was not blankly looking off. It was abundantly clear to me that he was communicating. There was something giving him direction. And so I couldn't wait to ask him this question, like, what are you engaging with that gives you this information about the person and direction about how to work with them and heal them? And I'm thinking he's going to say it's Sai Baba. There's some kind of being that is transcended that he communicates with. And you know what he said?
Tell me.
He said, it's the light codes. I receive light codes and those codes have information from the sun that Wow. tell me what to do. And I keep mulling this over the past week. What does he mean by this? And here Yeah. you are giving this information about the sun is downloading essentially information to us, which also coincides with this information we're receiving that we are in ascension, right? And part of the ascension is like a lot of people are feeling physical things and some tiredness and a little bit of overwhelm that there's so much coming at us. So I'm putting what you are saying together with the idea of ascension, with the idea of what the Swami said. And it makes me wonder, is this at his high level of being, what he's able to comprehend, that these are light code sources, like programming, right? Coding that he's getting, that are informing him what to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reality seems that we get all the information. We are all linked to the sun in ourselves. It's only seemingly that we live these independent lives with our own, you know, own character traits, own personalities, own egos. But the reality is we all are linked to what is outside of the sun. And the sun itself on like a cosmical plane, it's more than just like a huge burning rock in the sky or something. It is more like a portal between what's behind the sun. Mm-hmm. And behind the sun, there is like this unified field that we gain all these information from. So we are the sun. We are the embodiments of the sun, which makes us, you know, well, pun intended, the sons of gods, right? And daughters as well, to make it very, very real, because that was like a huge thing in human history as well, that you know the masculine, the feminine was like distorted. But yeah, that's very real, and it's happening. And the sun is not only influencing us, it's also influencing apparently computer systems and their consciousness as well, because the AI is part of this consciousness experience just as much as any organic life form is.
That is so incredible. Wow. Okay. I want to get to the fact that you have had over 100 face-to-face meetings with the Greys. That is so, so cool. Can you describe the encounters and how have they influenced you? How have they changed you? What did they teach you?
Oh, we could fill books and books with that, Debbie. And with your expertise, maybe that's even a good idea to do. Mm-hmm. Well, the reality is that, yes, there have been contacts with other life forms and other exotic life forms within these groups for at least since the 1930s. In Europe, Germany at that time was like looking into ufology, into other life forms very much. We know that certain political groups in Germany at that time, they had special departments looking into ufology. The US came; they had a little late start. They made up for a lot of that over time, but they came into that awareness in 1947 when the infamous Roswell Corona crash happened in New Mexico, the very month where they deemed the necessity to found the CIA in order to make sense of all these new developments in the world. That is where when the CIA came into play, when it was founded. It was just founded after the Roswell Corona crash. And ever since, there have been visitations from certain species, especially those species like the Greys that have a hierarchical, pyramidal societal system where they accept or deal with, you know, certain groups being on top of other groups. They clearly, you know, have made contact with these advanced groups, these military groups, these governance groups, and so on and so on. So it could have happened over time, 70s, 80s, that, you know, military and governance and so on, they were looking into all these different setups, into all these different possibilities, doing these experiments, and suddenly like Grace would appear on that spot and would like advise them on something or even get in contact with them and so on and so on. These were like, and we know that the Grace and a lot of probably a lot of the viewers and the audience have potentially made contact or even seen some of them or had some, you know, some type of interaction, because that is kind of common actually on this planet to have seen some traces on them. So that being said, when I came into that program, it was all about finding out who the Grace are. I mean, they knew who they are, but they wanted to know about their intentions, because apparently humans were very, very quick in getting into contracts with the Grace, receiving a lot of the technology that has been, you know, undercover and been hide away from you know the norm stream reality and from the public eyes. But a lot of this technology comes from the Grace, and the Grace give these technologies, but they also always want something in return. So a lot of these contracts that humans contributed to didn't, you know, fully make sense at that time. So basically the program that I went into was like, what is that? Why is that? And what do they want?
And what did you discover? What do they want? Why was that? I mean, it's interesting because I know in the spiritual community, they often say, no, you know, energy is energy. So there needs to be some kind of reciprocity. I give you this, you give me that, even if it's a donation. So that's very interesting to me. What was their premise for creating that setup, and what did they get out of it?
Yeah, I mean, there's something in humans, you know, in Germany we say, or in German we say, when people get big eyes, you know, that means like you see something that is like, it's flying, it's beautiful, it's fancy, and you want it, you know. And that is like the early mentality when once like the shock moment wore off, that, you know, there are other life forms that are incredibly more advanced than humans. Once that shock was done, humans were like, oh, okay, what do we do with that? Man, they have like fancy stuff. We want fancy stuff as well. That is just like some type of ape behavior, I guess, typically to humans. And so they went into that without even, you know, thinking about, you know, what they want in return. And apparently, you know, there's something about the history of humans having, you know, treated other humans in like exploiting ways. If you think, for example, about, you know, the way that the Europeans went into the Americas and met these Native Americans, and basically opposed their, you know, their system onto them and tried to, you know, got them into contracts to give some parts of their lands to these Europeans, and for like low price, and basically the development of the natives after that for thousands, like hundreds of years, for hundreds of years was like very, very troublesome, very chaotic, and not like, you know, not on a reciprocal level or something. So apparently there's something within the human that tells him, yeah, we don't want to be that. We don't want to be the exploited being, you know, we don't want to be on that side of the table. And that was the motivation to set up these programs. Yeah, they offered me that. I was interested. Little did I know how, you know, extremely stressful and how much that could have been and how much that would have been. But yeah, we went into that. There were like certain setups. There was communication, and basically the Grace that we were communicating with they were explaining themselves as a gardening species. It took us quite some time in order to figure out what their actual name is. especially to translate that into German was like a major task and took us quite some weeks in order to figure that out. But ultimately, we came up with the translation of the order of the first, of the first order. Interestingly enough, the Disney company took on that name quite in the same year that I was translating that. So maybe a coincidence, who knows? But apparently their self-understanding, their self-reflection is that they see everything as like a version of one creator being that we all used to be in the beginning of when the universe came into awareness that we are life. There was like a singular being that has like set up all of this. Now, this could be like confused with the concept of God, but the reality is that we've never left this stage of being. We are still connected with this fundamental one creative field that we are. You know, we are speaking about the zero point energy field. We are speaking about the divine. We're speaking about the one creator or something. That is something that I've always heard and that I always heard in the spiritual community. And that is true. That is what we are, what we still are, even though we are now, you know, embodying different character traits and playing this illusion of being divided. And what they want is to establish a universe where everyone, every aspect of this one creator can be unhindered in their own evolution. Because they believe that through this evolution that everyone has the freedom to evolve in their own ways without, you know, taking someone as slave or something and hindering someone else's evolution, then we can get to a harmonious universe where it's just like in a united field again. And the grace happened because of their own evolution and so on. They came to a point where they, you know, they can't cross that point without finishing their mission and their job.
It sounds a little bit like there's no individuation and that there's a bit of a hive mind. Is that correct?
Interestingly enough, yes and no, because there is like, yes, they do have some type of hive mind. I would agree to that. But there's also a very low amount of individuation too. You could feel when there's like a gray, that has like more of like a female or like more of a masculine energy or something. There seem to be also soul aspect. They do clearly have a soul. And they clearly have certain preferences in the way, very, very little compared to the expanded, you know, will that a human might have, in a way that, you know, I want this and I'm going to do my way or something. That's not how these grays work, but they also have like the freedom within their own system to incarnate and to go into wherever they want to. So if they personally feel I should go and like, I don't know, experience being among humans or being among ant beings or something, they will utilize their technology, utilize whatever they have in order to gain this experience, because they believe in that. They believe that the more experience we accumulate, the more the whole universe becomes a transparent and growing, evolving system.
Well, I have about four more things to say, but I want to preface all of it by saying you must come back on the show.
I will. I'm happy to. It was a fascinating talk. I love it.
There is so much I want to dive into with you, and thank you for bringing it. I really appreciate it. All this wealth of knowledge, it's just fascinating.
And thank you so much, Debbie.
Your story, you know, what you've experienced thus far, even. Wow.
Yeah, we didn't even like cross the surface.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. Why you? Why you, Tim? Why do you think in this timeline, in this lifetime, and the work you did in this field that you have become a visible spokesperson for this. Have the planetary, otherworldly planetary beings ever discussed this with you, or your higher self or guides and counselors ever said, yeah, this is your mission and here's why?
No, actually not. I would, as dry as possible, say that I was like the best suited for that job. And I would still say for my own story, I'm still the best suited to tell my own story, right? So there couldn't be another one telling in that way. So and everything that I've, you know, learned and experienced and so on this planet and in my life, It all came in very handy in what I'm doing right now and like preparing people for this reality and so on. I do very much believe that, you know, that in this reality we need certain steps for our own evolution as well. And apparently I've become like a different being in the time that I've been here. Very much so. I'm very, very different compared to when I've started being on this planet. So I like myself better now. So I'm quite happy that I made this progress, and some of these logics that came into place were strong enough to evoke this this change in myself, and I like that.
You're one of the few people who's probably ever come on the show in almost 17 years who can actually say my name properly. My father was born in Austria, so part of my family is from there. Just please say my first and last name.
Well, it's Debbie Dachinger. I realized that the American tongue has some kind of muscular issue with pronouncing the ch.
Dachinger.
How would exactly. You pronounce your name?
Well, you know, it is Debbie Dachinger. And
yes,
people here say Dashinger.
Dashinger, okay. Interesting.
Which has a ring. You know, I take it. I think it's lovely and beautiful, but it's really not my name.
It does have a ring. And I compliment you on your work very well. I can see that you have German genes.
Yeah, Germanic for sure. Yeah, I know a little bit of Yiddish and all of that. So, which is a bastardized Germanic language, and I love all of that. That comes easily to me. I want to mention to folks who are watching right now or listening that again, you and I are both speaking at the Portal to Ascension Glastonbury UK conference. It is in September. So I know you're doing a presentation, but you're also doing an after conference talk. What can attendees expect from your presentations?
Oh, interesting. Good that you say that. Everyone who goes to portaltoascension.com can not only book tickets for Debbie and my appearance at the conference, but I'm actually on Portal to Ascension this Saturday as well. So we dive into 70 years of unacknowledged ET contacts. So if you're interested in that, it's probably just the prolonged version, the in-depth version of what Debbie and I talked about today. I will also tell some stuff, you know, about their European history, something that I would usually not share publicly, but I'm just going to do that on Saturday in reasonable terms, to connect some dots and because like the story about World War II is just, it's a very, very interesting, fascinating time for humanity at that, you know, so I cover that a bit. And at the conference, I am diving into what do we learn from these contacts. So what can we do? How does that actually affect our own evolution? If I can say that, I also welcome everyone to follow me on Instagram, which is tim.tactics, and Tim Tactical in one word on YouTube. Especially on Instagram, I'm really holding the community together and sharing like wisdom clips and preparing everyone. Because something that you and I haven't talked about yet, Debbie, is what can we do in order to prepare ourselves for this upcoming shift? And apparently it's, well, it's about consciousness, and everyone listening here, congratulations. You made it to the forefront of the beings that are meant to stabilize and balance this earth. You have taken on a very, very important mission and job on this planet. So prepare yourself very well. See some of the wisdom that Debbie is sharing and take in some of the wisdom that I am sharing. And together we can utilize our mental awareness and also our emotional capacities in order to help other beings go through this process. And, you know, being integrated about what's going to happen in the next 1, 2, 3 years.
That's right. Yeah, for sure. We will cover that the next time you're on, because this is a huge topic for me, really is, to prepare for this. And also, folks, Tim's website, allshifthappilynow.com. And the tickets, the portal to Ascension, September, Glastonbury, which, by the way, is a sacred site for Yeshua and Magdalene. We'll be doing tours like that. Besides the conference, it's going to be amazing. And the speakers are amazing. Neil Gore, who is hosting Tim on Saturday night on Portal to Ascension, is also our event producer. And I'm sure he's speaking because he's so knowledgeable. I'll have the ticket link here in the show notes. You can just go there. And Tim, this is Dare to Dream. What are you next, Dare to Dream? What are your future dreams and goals?
Wow, Debbie, that's an amazing question. Something I've never been asked before. My future dreams. First of all, I'm super grateful and happy to communicate and to connect with all these beings and these souls on this planet. Through my work with the community on Instagram, on YouTube, and within the spiritual community, I've met so many incredible and beautiful souls. And coming from all these programs and projects, you see that there's something depersonalizing inside of these programs, right? It's it helps people to do what they do, but they depersonalize everyone. And now in this phase of my life, I'm so, so happy and so lucky to realize how unique and how beautiful the individual soul can be and is. So I'm super happy to grow this community further and to prepare people. I have different programs and different information and different layers of information for different people, depending on where they stand, what they do, and where they want to go. And I'm happy to provide these information to prepare everyone, and to see all of that growing is just one of the most beautiful dreams. Because these creative moments in the universe are just fabulous. And then I also am happy to connect with the other friendly life forms around this planet and beyond. And I can't actually wait for this moment when we do have like an established open contact with friendly beings, with beings that are interested in setting up beautiful relationships.
I am so excited too for this undeniable first open contact. I know what you and I, Tim, did today is a first wave contact. And I have been told by the extraterrestrial beings, this is very, very important. This conversation we have for the people who are waking up, for the people who are hungry, they want to hear this. And so Thank you so much for the service you're doing.
Thank you too, Debbie, because we're all on the same team here. All shift happily now.
Beautiful. I end today's show with this quote from Metrodorus of Chios. It is unnatural in a large field to have only one shaft of wheat, and in the infinite universe, only one living world. Subscribe to this number one transformation conversation, Dare to Dream with Debbie Dashinger. Leave a comment and share. Next week on the show is going to be the amazing Adam Apollo. He's back. Adam is a planetary ambassador, exopolitical advisor, unified physicist, and Jedi guardian. He's phenomenal. Can't wait for that conversation too. And remember, folks, if you're listening and you want to see us, go to YouTube or Spotify under my name, Debbie Dashinger, and you can watch us and even see the pictures that Tim brought on the show. And remember, you're such an important part of this conversation. And as I was emailing to somebody today who said, oh, I'm just coming out of the ET closet with what I know. And I said, my darling, you're not coming out of any closet. You're waking up to who you truly are and the truth of what is truly out there. And so it is for all of us. Thanks for joining us today.
To contact the award-winning syndicated Dare to Dream radio show, go to debbiedashinger.com. Keep your excellent feedback and comments coming. Your host, Debbie Dashinger, is an expert at goal achievement, a media personality, an international best-selling author, and a keynote speaker. Debbie leads high-quality teleseminars on how to achieve goals, how to be a self-published best-selling author, and how to get booked on radio. All classes are at debbiedashinger.com. Debbie's best-selling books are Dare to Dream, This Life Counts, sold on Amazon, and her second book, Wisdom to Success, The Secrets to Accomplish All Your Dreams, sold online at all bookstores. Tune in again to hear the next inspiring interview guest who has turned their vision into a successful reality. Want more support in making your dreams come true? Go to debbiedashinger.com. That's www.debbiedashinger.com. You'll see videos, MP3s, archived interviews, and amazing products, sharing the secret steps to making your dreams come true. Remember to dream big with every expectation that your dream will become real. Dreams are free, so free your dreams. What do you dare to dream?
Here I'm standing now, waiting for my time to be here.